So welcome back to the Birdie Bug Pod,
episode 47.
So welcome back.
It's nice to be back.
It's nice to be back. We always seem to say this, it's been a while.
We've had a very busy few years. I've been trying to move house, finish a degree.
Yes, it's been chaos.
Go and do nerdy holidays with my brothers, and you were unwell when on holiday.
You've been doing nerdy toy soldiers, haven't you?
Yeah, Warhammer. If people who know what that is will then realise it's actually really cool.
It is really cool.
But yeah, so it
four has grown men taking their toy soldiers all the way to Nottingham to sit on a table and battle with dice.
Yeah, but it's fun though, isn't it?
Oh no, it's amazing.
But yeah, so it has been a little while again. Really, it was your fault for being ill.
The flu absolutely knocked me out completely.
But it is really nice to be back.
It's great to be back. It's always good to be back.
As always, I don't have any catch-up because that was my catch-up, really. But you have at least gone and visited a nice RSPB reserve.
Oh, I spent 2 days. Did it on the spur of the moment because the weather was just so amazing.
Random
having
2 days.
Had such a rubbish winter with drab, grey days, wind and rain, suddenly we've got this little window of beautiful weather, so we dashed down to Arne, which is, to be honest, only a couple of hours away from us, but stayed overnight and split it over 2 days, and it was just stunning. Walking over the heath down there with the frost all over the heath, and yeah, we saw Dartford warblers and all the wading birds that are overwintering there, lots of curlews, which I absolutely love, spoonbills down there as well, which was incredible. But it's just a stunning environment. Lots of different habitats. We saw lots of deer. You've got woodland. You've got the estuary, salt marshes, and this beautiful heath. Stunning. And we spent 2 days in the sunshine. It was beautiful.
That's
not a bad catch up.
No, it's pretty good.
So
we often before some of these episodes we say to each other it could be a slightly shorter one, and it never is because it turns out we can talk for days. So we should probably just get straight into
it. We'll just crack on.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a different topic. This was actually one that you wanted to talk about. This was your sort of choice. But it's a topic that I think is close to both of us and a little bit different because it's not a species, not a habitat. We're going to be talking about volunteering and then the subsect of volunteering that is citizen science and sort of the value of that to the environmental sector. Some really cool examples around the UK, both historical and ongoing, as well as probably talking a little bit about the voluntary work that we've done.
Yeah.
And just as a little bit of an overview of all the things that people are involved in and that you, if you wanted to, you can get involved in. And just as a little, it's a really big part of the environment sector. Obviously, it's a big part in lots of sectors, but for this podcast, it's very much nature, wildlife and environment focused.
Yeah, I mean, I think unless you are a volunteer or you have done citizen science projects and things, I think people aren't really aware of just the scale of voluntary work that goes on across so many different sectors. Obviously, we're going to concentrate on our passion, our conservation and wildlife and habitat volunteering. But the voluntary work goes across all sectors of society and industry. And
yeah, and obviously, we're focusing very much here on the UK stuff as well. So to kick it off then, you've mentioned the scale. I just thought I'd throw a few numbers sort of to put that into perspective. So this is just for 2024.
Yeah.
I have over 7,000 volunteers participate in river testing by Earthwatch, which is in like water blitzes, testing 4,000 sites, which then played a big role in sort of pushing for policy and stricter sort of pollution rules. I've got more than 85,000 citizen scientists getting involved in the big butterfly counts, submitting 142,000 counts, which is the equivalent to 35,800 hours or 4 years worth of counting butterflies.
That's
which
amazing.
Is amazing. And in one of our episodes, we actually mentioned the news of butterfly decline in the UK and the big report. And that came about through the butterfly count. So that was all citizen scientists. The Woodland Trust's Nature's Calendar had 11,000 contributors, adding to a data set that now exceeds 1 million records. In 2024, road closure, which is done in Somerset to help toads cross the road, involved 50 volunteers helping 3,000 amphibians cross the road. So really, there's an absolute ton of these voluntary and citizen science initiatives going on across the country. And it really does show the passion that people have because they're giving up their own time.
Yeah.
To count butterflies, count birds, help a toad cross the road, all sorts of things which I'll touch on later, from planting trees to picking up litter to monitoring birds. It's amazing to see people giving up their own time for no other reason than to contribute to conservation and helping our environment.
Yeah, and I think that's why I wanted to highlight this, because as I say, I volunteer, you volunteer, but I think unless you do that, unless you are involved in it, I think people don't appreciate, I'm sure they don't appreciate the actual scale of all of these people out there doing stuff. And I've got some amazing stats. In 2023, the voluntary sector, and that's not just in conservation, that's in its entirety.
Yeah, I mean, you've got things like the medical care.
Yeah, absolutely. Social services is a huge one. Contributed about £18 billion to the UK economy, which is 0.8% of the UK's GDP. The Office for National Statistics estimate that last year around 1 in 3 people, or almost 20 million people, formally did voluntary work through groups, clubs or organisations at least once during the year, and at least half of us did some form of informal unpaid work to help others. Social services subsector is huge, but the voluntary sector, I reckon, employs over 925,000 workers. And to put that into a little bit of perspective for the organisations that I volunteer with, the RSPB enjoyed the support of 12,441 volunteers last year, giving the RSPB a gift of time of about 1,026,000 hours. And volunteers, which I, this was a stat that I didn't realise, volunteers account for 85% of the RSPB workforce, without whom crucial conservation work would be that much more difficult or financially impossible to do. So
yeah,
that's,
I mean, lots
that's,
of charities rely very heavily on volunteers.
That's where the value comes into a volunteer works. All of these organisations, and a majority of them are charities or what have you, there's no way they could fund all of the projects and gather all the data that they these volunteers do. And it's I mean, we've talked about citizen science so many times in our episodes, the fact that how important that data is that they're accumulating.
Yeah,
but there's this sort of crossover of volunteering and citizen science, because there are all sorts of different factors to both of them, which are really important. And we've obviously talked about data gathering for citizen science.
And
there's a lot more to volunteering as well, isn't there?
All the citizen science projects we talk about are volunteers, but not all volunteering is citizen science, because sometimes you're litter picking, planting trees. The citizen science often involves a little bit of training, not always, but that is then contributing normally to some sort of data.
It's mostly surveying and gathering data, isn't it?
So. Yeah, I'll talk about some of the benefits to like science itself for employing citizen scientists, but a bit like what you said with charity work, is you couldn't get thousands of scientists paid across the country to survey. It's just financially would be insane for any research organisation to be able to pay for that manpower. So having people do it voluntarily is the only real way you can have that volume of data across such a widespread region. It's just the only way it's viable.
Yeah.
But it also, as I'll talk about a little bit later, has a lot of benefits to the people and policy
and
society.
There's huge benefits to the volunteers themselves, which obviously, as you said, you'll touch on a bit later. But so the value is enormous.
Yeah, and what I wanted to just hop in with was that I think nowadays citizen science and certain, well, volunteering in general, but citizen science particularly, has become more, I guess, known or talked about. You see articles popping up, certainly in places like The Guardian or to online blogs and social media, of things where, like, the water blitz was one. That Guardian article came out about that, and it's talked about a little bit more, but it's not a new thing. And going back to the Woodland Trust's Nature's Calendar, which is basically a project that encourages volunteers to record seasonal changes, things like flowering times, animal migrations, all sorts of things like that. And it's basically used for scientists to track the impacts of climate change, certainly nowadays, and what that has, what sort of what it does to our wildlife and their behaviours. And the records for this program date back to 1736, making it one of the longest running biological data sets of its kind.
That's
which
amazing.
Is just incredible.
Yeah.
So we spoke a little bit about this before we started recording. It essentially is all centered around phenology, which is the study of these seasonal changes. But they've got pretty brilliantly done like live maps where you can track, you can choose a species like blue tits, for example, yeah, and look at how the records have changed over years. The data has contributed to all sorts of published scientific reports. They also do a seasonal report as well. But I think I mentioned in my intro stat that yes, it now exceeds over a million records, which isn't too surprising considering how long it's been going on. But the value of that data over that length of time, if you want to look at a big picture of changes of UK wildlife, you've got maps dating back centuries. And it's just, it's incredible how long people have been involved and invested in.
It is incredible. And I've got some, I mean, the earliest examples of sort of observational citizen science, for particularly for bird watchers, goes all the way back to the 19th century when naturalists and amateur scientists began contributing observations to the knowledge about the natural world. So they were using scientists and volunteers and amateurs were all putting this data together. It really did start to escalate with the internet and all the digital technologies. Yeah. And there's a great example, which again, I didn't know. There was one called Galaxy Zoo, which was launched in 2007. It was one of the first groundbreaking citizen science projects. And in this project, participants were tasked with classifying images of galaxies captured by telescopes.
Oh, that's cool.
Helping astronomers categorize billions of galaxy images. So all volunteers did this as a citizen science project. Work that could have taken researchers decades to complete on their own. And this project alone showed how powerful large-scale public involvement could be in processing data. And it was an incredible project. And they really would have taken them decades and decades to do it.
Just think of the manpower. It's just,
and it was millions of people all over the world engaged in that project. So there are lots and lots of different examples of that. We could talk all day about the different examples. And it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, maybe I'll hop in now then with some of the benefits of citizen science. So
Hop in,
I will. And I've still got to give a plug for the citizen science program I'm involved in running. But so obviously, we've covered a little bit, but some of the benefits for science itself. The biggest one is the ability to generate large data sets. I've mentioned earlier the feasibility of trying to get a research team. Research teams are normally relatively small, even big ones comparatively are quite small, to collect data over time, over, sometimes it's over multiple countries, but even if you just look at like across the UK, for example, you just wouldn't be able to create that much data without the voluntary workforce. It also really allows quite a diverse sort of evaluation capability. So you've got people out there taking photos, taking videos, surveying, so you can get them collecting all sorts of different types of data. But beyond that, it does things like increases the public acceptance of the research because people have been involved. It's not sort of done behind closed doors in some sort of research facility, then it just pops up. People have been involved, maybe they've been chatting about it, but the public awareness leads to greater public acceptance of the science that's published, which is really important, especially when we're talking about things like climate change, where that can sometimes be a challenge. And it also promotes scientific literacy around people who are involved. They become a little bit more familiar with the data sets and maybe they can evaluate some of the work that comes out from other programs, and they just become a little bit more familiar with interpreting and understanding what goes into a scientific project, which again is really important for people to really work out, you know, especially if it then results in policy changes, understanding why those policy changes are necessary because they've been involved in the process.
It's a really good sort of educational path, isn't it, when you get involved in volunteering, because you learn so much as well.
So you go from perhaps not having any awareness of, I don't know, say the birds in your area, and then you start surveying, then you start noticing changes, and then suddenly, I don't know, maybe a policy comes out saying we need to make these changes to our infrastructure because we need swift bricks, for example. We're not actually, you know what, I've noticed swift counts have gone down.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And so it just sort of helps really breed this awareness of some of the issues and then the necessary solutions. That sort of leads into some of the benefits for society. It allows communities to take a bit of responsibility and ownership, which then sort of breeds this sort of passion and sense of care, certainly around the environment as well. There's a big thing nowadays for democratizing data, making sure it's available to people. It's not, again, something that you have to be I don't know, part of a university or behind a paywall, people should be able to go and see this data, and publicly available is normally through things like citizen science. So it's really important to have that accessible.
Yeah,
to
I see that firsthand actually, because the BTO are fantastic at that.
Yeah, they and, are brilliant.
You know, you can go on the BTO site and there's so much transparency about all of the data and all of this incredible information that's being gathered, and it's all just there for you to see. And it's so important.
I'll talk about, obviously, I'll give Big River Watch a proper plug later.
Of course you will.
But it's the same with that, you know, the all the data that's collected is publicly available. It's the same with like a lot of the other research from people like Earthwatch and stuff. You can go and see their maps.
Yeah.
Woodland Trust is another one.
Woodland Trust is brilliant.
For the individuals actually getting involved, it allows them to literally contribute to a scientific study. Like, you're part of that process. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean you need to be a scientist as your career, but you're still contributing to really important discoveries and research. And the participants are similar to what I said about society. It improves the understanding and helps people sort of take ownership. And then for policy makers, so when we're talking about if these scientific data sets are influencing government changes, the connection between the communities involved in generating the data and the authorities is really crucial, because again, the policy changes impact the communities. So if they are connected to it, they're much more likely to be behind it, to support it. If you've got people campaigning for big environmental or climate change bills, and they've, I don't know, spent however many hours testing their rivers and doing habitat restoration, they're going to get behind that and rally behind it. And
so we know how difficult it is to change policy. So all that weight of local communities.
So if you've got people who've got a real passion and they've actually put time into it, they're more likely to get out and vote or support or do whatever it is they need to do to help those policies, you know, become law. It helps with sort of general public engagement. It keeps the authority connected to what citizens care about. So if you've got a news article of thousands of people are out there, I don't know, trying to pick up litter in the woodlands, the authorities go, well, it's clearly really important to people. We need to pick up this issue. So it really helps them work out what people are worried about. And yeah, essentially all of that sort of boils down to creating public support for these measures. So the benefits that go far beyond just generating data, it spreads across all sorts of different sectors and different parts, from the individual to society to governments. And
yeah, and there's lots of studies about, you know, we talk a lot these days about mental and physical health.
Yeah.
It's fantastic for that, with people going out, volunteering, doing a lot of things like habitat management and, you know, getting out in the fresh air. It's a really good thing. And it's giving people a real sense of purpose as well, which is a really good thing. So there's so many benefits both ways, you know, for the organisations that those volunteers are giving their time to, but also the volunteer themselves. So and I've seen that firsthand, and we've both seen that firsthand, haven't we? So
I think that, I mean, there are a lot of sort of studies coming out nowadays showing the benefits, so to say, for mental and physical well-being for spending time in green and blue spaces. Yeah. But then there's also lots of studies that show the benefit of A, being part of a community, but also doing something to improve your local community, or doing something for the benefit, like giving up your time to benefit others, whether that's other people or nature. And these sorts of initiatives combine all of that. You're spending time in nature and you're doing something sort of altruistic. And so the actual benefit to physical and mental well-being is huge. And if your people are, you know, struggling, and the other big problem nowadays is, you know, loneliness or lack of connection, you bump into people, you've automatically got a shared interest. You're clearly passionate about, I don't know, bats or birds or rivers, and then you foster a nice little community of people trying to do good.
I think there's also a big thing about it creates awareness of the things that are going on around. And a classic example of that for me, again, that's very close to my heart, is the RSPB's Big Garden Bird Watch.
Yeah.
And of course, RSPB put all the data out and all the counts that they put out at the end of it. So you can see whether, you know, last year there were a load more blue tits than there are now. And so it does bring that awareness to people that things are changing. There aren't so many birds in the garden as there were. Perhaps they're a particular species now that you used to see loads of and now you don't. And that's as simple as sitting, you know, in your garden for an hour counting birds. But, you know, this year, 408,000 people did that, gave their time to participate in that Big Garden Bird Watch. And that, again, that data is crucial, but it also brings that awareness to people that things are changing.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, their wildlife and their local wildlife is changing, and or the certainly the populations of the wildlife are changing, and I think that's a huge thing as
yeah,
well.
It is massive.
So when you engage in these volunteer projects, you learn a huge amount. You learn loads that's going on in the world.
Well, I mean, some of them actually, some of, certainly around citizen science, involve a degree of training. I actually don't think I added it to my list, but the Woodland Trust have one. I think this is the right name, because there is a program that I really like, because it's called Observatory, which I just think
that's really cool.
A cracking name. But that actually might not be the one I'm thinking of. But they have a citizen science initiative where people and volunteers are trained to recognize signs of certain pests. And so they are actually given that knowledge. So then when they're out wandering their local parks, going on dog walks, whatever it is, they can spot and record and alert authorities and the Woodland Trust of this invasive pest has been spotted. And then obviously the appropriate action can be taken. But those people sign up and are trained. And it's the same with some of the water testing. People are trained to carry out those kits. You've got a lot is quite typical for invasive species things that can be, I don't know, not necessarily easily recognized unless you've learned. You'll spend a day maybe with you know, a volunteer coordinator learning about, these are our native plants, these are the plants that shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
If you spot, record it, let us know, and we'll try and remove it. And so it's a really nice way of actually gaining some knowledge about local flora and fauna, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, and there are, you know, we're talking about citizen science and data gathering, and there's a different angle to volunteering as well. For example, you know, a lot of the volunteering for in the RSPB would be habitat management,
yeah.
Or like I do, you know, being a patrol volunteer where I'll go
like
and do
a ranger
where I'll go and do a 3 or 4 hour shift walking around the reserve, making sure people are having a nice time. Talking to them about the birds and the wildlife that are on there if they want to, making sure they keep their dogs under control at times of the year when, you know, they're ground nesting birds or overwintering birds, etc. So there's lots of different angles to volunteering in the conservation world.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a few examples. I mean, I'll jump in with another Rivers Trust plug. I'm responsible for pulling the Rivers Trust impact report together, so I get all the stats. But across 2023 to 2024, because it's done financial year, the Rivers Trust movement, so that's the collection of local trusts across the UK and Ireland, so all of the local trusts, engaged with 20,855 volunteers. And a lot of that is through things like tree planting and river cleans. And so that's 540 river cleans and 466,990 trees planted. And that's just, that's, you know, not far from what, 500,000 trees planted.
Incredible.
And so, but that wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for local people getting out there to plant trees.
Yeah, I mean, I actually got the Woodland Trust is amazing.
They're a cracking
absolutely
organization.
Brilliant. And I've got this, I think once a month, I get this lovely little newsletter that comes through. And what I loved about it, I've got it in front of me actually, so I'm going to rattle a few bits of paper, because they send this lovely newsletter out, and what is so heartwarming is this newsletter is all positive,
which is always great.
But there's lots of little clips on here about volunteering, which I just thought was very relevant to us doing this podcast. For example, a new wood in Frodsham in Cheshire was dug entirely by school children and volunteers, and 30,000 saplings were planted in a single season. But they did some fantastic things. They threw a party at a farm near Neath in Wales for the Caribbean and South Asian communities, where they gathered to mark the 75th anniversary of the Windrush. And the event set a joyful seal on our biggest ever new wood in Wales, where 150,000 young trees were transforming a former sheep farm for both people and wildlife. And they couldn't have done it without a brilliant volunteer crew who spent 1,600 happy hours building benches, restoring hedges, planting trees and corralling the resident herd of Welsh white cattle. But every single article in here is about the incredible amount of trees, new woodlands that are planted, and it's all done with volunteers.
Yeah, I see.
It was absolutely heartwarming to read. With a cup of coffee, it just made me smile this morning.
But I mean, if you think, like,
fantastic.
No individual organisation, charity or not, is going to be able to have okay, I'll use the Rivers Trust number because I have it here, 20,000 members of staff across the country planting trees. It's just not viable.
How do you plant 150,000 saplings with a small collection of staff? You just
can't do it, can you? You take, like the Wildlife Trust operates in a similar way. There's local trusts all dotted about. You take a collection of local trusts, all of whom engage with a local community of volunteers, and the amount of work that they can crack out is mind-blowing. And it's just, it's fantastic to see. And obviously we moved on slightly from citizen science into sort of more general volunteering that isn't necessarily data collection. And I wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to something that's coming up 21st of March, the 6th of April, which is the Great British Spring Clean, which is litter picking essentially. And you can go onto their website and you pledge a number of rubbish bags of litter that you're going to collect. And again, that's a comparatively quite simple task, picking up litter, putting it in a bag. Lots of people do beach cleans,
loads of people do stuff like that.
But this is run by a really, really cool organization called Keep Britain Tidy. Last year, more than 425,000 bags of litter were collected.
That's disgusting.
Positively, I know.
It's a disgusting stat.
Yeah, it is sad, but it's positive that people are doing it. It obviously is really good for the environment, communities, nature, and bringing it back to like the positive impacts for people. Last year, after surveying the volunteers, 97% of people involved in the campaign agreed that they felt like they had made a difference to their local area, and 86% felt like they were part of a national movement tackling an issue. And so going back to that sort of importance of having a bit of a purpose or a sense of ownership or looking after your local community, the people who got involved in the Great British Spring Clean felt like they had made a difference, which is lovely, because I think often these issues that we talk about, certainly when it comes to habitat decline and species decline and climate change, you can sort of sometimes feel like you can't do anything because they're such big problems. Again, if everybody does a little something, that is a huge accumulation.
We've talked about it so many times.
Beyond the impact it has to the environment, it's the impact to us. It makes you think, I can do something. Hope is not lost. Even if I'm just picking up some litter and surveying some birds, I'm still making a difference. And I think that's really important. You don't want to fall into the sort of the eco-anxiety and slight hopelessness.
No, and of course, if you go and contribute to planting a woodland,
you go back in 50
years,
that's
an amazing thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and so just to bring it really back,
297,500 hours were contributed by Woodland Trust volunteers in 2023.
Yeah, which is incredible. Hang on. Just hold up.
I've just got so many stats.
Very quickly.
Sorry.
21st of March, 6th of April, Keep Britain Tidy website if you want to get involved in the Great British Spring Clean. All right, now you can do your stats.
Sorry. I'm just full of stats and I'm just...
Yeah, we're throwing numbers at you left, right and centre today.
And I love those kind of stats. 297,500 hours were contributed by Woodland Trust volunteers in 2023, which equates to a £2.3 million value to the Woodland Trust. 4,500 people volunteer with us across the UK every single year.
I mean, we'll stick a bunch of links in the show notes to some of the organisations we mentioned so you can go and find them, because lots of them do things locally. What I thought might be quite nice, actually, before I do my proper plug, is what is the voluntary work that you do? Because I know you do stuff for RSPB, you know, you do some for BTO as well, and I'm sure it's popped up in other episodes, but what are the voluntary roles you take on?
Well, I'm doing three different parts of volunteering now. I started off as a patrol ranger, site ranger, so I go and try and do it once a week, actually, on RSPB Pagham Nature Reserve.
Your favourite place.
It's one of my favourite places on the planet. And so I volunteer and I do a shift. There's a whole team of us. We have a little rota calendar, so we don't overlap. Sometimes we go out together and we just patrol the reserve. It's really important parts of the year there. At the moment, it's the overwintering birds. We have upwards of 20,000 Brent geese that come in. It's an internationally important reserve.
You've got a
great
photo of a big flock of geese.
Yeah, and they come in. They come all the way from Siberia. They're absolutely exhausted. They come to feed. They come to rest. They feed up, getting ready for going back to their breeding habitat back in Siberia. And it's hugely important. So we have to patrol. We keep an eye on anything unusual that's coming in and report it. As far as wildlife, recently we've had long-eared owls there. Last year we had a purple heron, things like that. But we also have to make sure that people are keeping their dogs under control at these sensitive times. We're going into spring now with ground nesting birds. It's very important that we don't let dogs or people don't let dogs run across the salt marshes or across the grasslands where the birds are nesting. So it's things like that, but it's also engaging with the public and making sure they're having a nice time. So that's part of my
I am still a little bit disappointed that you're a volunteer ranger, but you don't get a sword. I feel like you should have
I don't get a sword. I do get a radio. I go out with a little walkie-talkie and a hat and a fleece, yeah. So,
but no sword or cloak.
I also do Brent Geese survey once a month. So we go and count the birds in the field once a month. It's really important because at the moment we're trying to campaign against some potential development. There's 400 houses that have been proposed, which are going to take some of those important feeding fields and roosting fields for the Brent geese.
Can I just hop in quickly?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, that's a really nice example of that. That is an issue that perhaps you would not have been aware of if you weren't involved in the volunteering.
No, absolutely. I wasn't
aware. And now
aware.
You're really passionate about it and you're something that you really want to
absolutely.
Combat. And that's come about being a volunteer.
It's hugely important. And we're trying to count monitor the amount of geese coming in so that we can fight their cause, because if we can prove to the council how important these fields are, it lends a lot of weight to the poor local people that are campaigning so hard to stop this development happening. So I do that once a month, and also for the first time in, I think it's end of this month actually, I'm going to go and do a bit of habitat management.
That'd be good fun. I've done a little bit of that. It's lovely.
There's a little island in the middle of the estuary called Tern Island. We get the little terns coming in. A couple of years ago, we got good numbers in, but a few years ago they were predated really badly by corvids, by crows, but also by rats. So they put electric fences around. And by foxes as well, swimming out to the island. So they put electric fences around to try and mitigate that, but the foliage and the scrub has grown up around the electric fences, so I'm going to go and do a bit of clearance on Tern Island. First time I've done a bit of habitat management, which I'm going to really enjoy. So those really are my volunteering activities for the RSPB. For BTO I do a few. I do a wetland bird survey, and I have a little 1 kilometre square patch, beautiful patch under the South Downs.
I know you've taken me to it.
That I walk around and I count all the overwintering birds that are coming in, and I have to log that and update the data to BTO.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want to talk about an organisation that pumps out fantastic data, it is BTO is a real example. Their booklets and their, because it's normally full-blown scientific analysis of it, but the way they present the data and their citizen science army is truly impressive.
The BTO is absolutely incredible organization.
They've got so much information out there,
but you know, the citizen science data, apparently the value of citizen science data to the BTO is estimated at over £2.5 billion pounds, because annually there's so many volunteers, so many citizen science projects that the BTO run. And in fact, if you go on the BTO website, you can see how many. And there's lots and lots of different ones from flora and fauna, monitoring and surveying, so many. And lots of apps, actually, that you can use to upload data.
Actually, the development of apps, like, there's certainly
it's a really good thing. There are lots of different ones.
Again, I'm going to plug one later, but in general, like, there's... there's literally one now, and it came out, might have even been last year. It's all about the invasive non-native species. And again, you upload data for things like floating pennywort and the hogweed and stuff
loads.
Like that. There's ones for ladybird sampling.
Pollinator monitoring schemes, national plant monitoring schemes.
The ability to photograph and record and then upload it instantly has been a real game changer for recruiting citizen scientists.
There's a thing called FIT count, which is a flower insect timed count, where you just go on over a timed period, count insects in a particular little patch, and then you upload that data. And that data, we've said so many times, is so crucial to giving an overall picture to what is happening to our biodiversity and our habitats, the effect of climate change, all of those things.
Well,
data is giving a picture to, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, in my little time as a zoologist, you do sampling, like transect sampling, where you throw like a meter by meter square land somewhere on a field and you'll count the number of insects, the number of flowers within that. And then you'll do that for a day. And then you can use that as almost like an average for the area that you're surveying. If you think the amount of time it would take a couple of ecologists to do that in a field, and then how much, you know, the data that's generating is maybe just for that one field, that one habitat. The app that you just mentioned where you're recording insects on flowers, and that's essentially a transect, but you'll have thousands of people doing it across the entire country.
It's incredible.
It's the exact same as recruiting thousands of ecologists to go and do a transect survey.
It's incredible.
And it's just, it blows my mind.
I'll give you a classic example of a BTO. They do a breeding bird survey. It's the 30th year this year. 9,000 volunteers collected from 7,000 different sites, which is a 1 kilometre square site. Everybody has a little square, and that goes across the whole of the country. And you can still sign up for a little your kilometre square, because there are still free squares to go on monitor. But those 9,000 volunteers collected from 7,000 different sites generated 8 million biological records amongst 119 species of breeding birds.
I mean, it gets to the point where you just can't wrap your head around these numbers.
But it's a major contributor to there's an annual wild bird indicator, and it can highlight the long-term decline of all the farmland birds. And now more recently, they've been applying that to woodland. So we can see the decline of our woodland species, and it's building up this very sad picture, but it's an important picture.
But you need to know the issues.
But we need to know. And then we can look at why our woodland bird species are declining, for example. And then these fantastic organisations like the Woodland Trust will go on, you know, secure a woodland that maybe there's development being planned for, and they'll go on, purchase that, regenerate it. So it's massively important. But there are.
It sounds like you're involved in a lot of it.
I love them. And I also do the garden bird feeding watch, where I have to upload data. I have to watch birds that are actually on my feeders in the garden. This is different to the garden, big garden bird watch.
Because that's just visiting birds.
This is actually how many birds are coming to my garden and feeding. And I actually have to fill in forms, upload data. And I do that over two three-month periods between October and March. And
I mean, send all that data. At this point, you're borderline just a full-time volunteer, aren't you?
I just love it. It is so uplifting to do it. And you, for me, it just feels like I'm making a difference, however small that difference is. When I'm counting brent geese, I mean, it's not a hard thing for me. I'm standing on this incredible...
I mean, you're going to be at Pagham anyway.
...nature reserve. I've still got my camera. I'm counting birds. I'm there with a team of absolutely delightful people. Every volunteer and every RSPB ranger or whatever I've had the delight to meet, they've just been fantastic people, because we all have this...
It's all shared interest
of just wanting to protect wildlife and loving wildlife and habitat so much.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, obviously, an episode that we mention a fair few times.
I sort of got over emotional.
That's all right. One of the episodes that we often sort of mention and give a shout out to, because we absolutely love recording it, was our interview with Reuben Martin.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, young lad, really interested in our reptiles, and, you know, he ended up on Spring Watch talking about it. And that all comes about through his volunteering work with the Amphibian Reptile Conservation Trust.
And he's already been out now, recording adders.
And yeah, and
he's been uploading pictures on his Instagram page.
That passion for the reptiles and conservation stuff has only been fueled by being able to go out and do surveys. It gives him the opportunity to go and enjoy the native wildlife whilst making a difference. And we'll always say go and listen to that episode, because I absolutely love recording it.
Oh, it's one of my favourite episodes without question.
It's a really
question.
Fantastic example of a volunteer making a difference and the impact that's then having on him as well. So it's a really lovely story of a volunteer. So
no, absolutely.
I mean, I don't do as much nowadays. What was nice is when I first moved to where I live now, I've got a very small nature reserve called Wildon Nature Reserve. And there's a little local community who on, I think it's like every other Thursday, or it might be one Thursday a month. In the nature reserve, there's essentially a pond. We've also got like hundreds of frogs breeding in there at the moment, but it was a bit overgrown when I first turned up, and I hadn't actually started my job yet. So I was free, and I went along and put some wellies on and a high vis, walked into the pond, and we were clearing invasive species, which was knackering, but incredible, absolutely caked in mud. And it's really lovely because it's a community of people that meet up. I can't remember how frequently. Sadly,
were you pulling out shopping trolleys and things like that?
Well, they have done. It was a little bit litter. It was more removing the invasive species of plants. But unfortunately for me, they normally meet up during work hours, so I often don't go and do that. But again, there's a community of local people that do, and they're solely responsible for looking after that nature reserve with a really good Facebook page. I'm also a school speaker for Animal Aid, so that's a little bit of a different one because it's not conservation, but it's around one of our other sort of passions, which is veganism and animal ethics, which we haven't really spoken about too much on the podcast. I think it's popped up once or twice, but essentially Animal Aid do a lot of campaigning for animal ethics and things like that, but it's just an educational thing. So there might be a school that contacts them in my area and they say, oh, we'd really love it if somebody could come and chat to our kids about these issues. And then I get an email being like, can you pop into a school? And I'm like, I'd love to. So then I go and give a talk to some school kids.
I think it's a great thing.
It's normally, you know, lots of people aren't necessarily aware of these issues, so I'll give a little presentation. But the more fun part is I get to answer all their questions. So I stand up there and they'll ping me all sorts of random questions about animal ethics and veganism and what it is and what it, and, you know, why do people sort of do it, and I get to answer their questions. As an organization, they're great as well because they go and do cooking demonstrations in schools to introduce kids to vegan food and vegan sweets and things like that. But that's a voluntary job that I absolutely love because I like presenting and I like talking to people, and it's probably the topic I could talk about most.
So. Well, one day we will do an episode about
possibly
being vegan. But I think we will. But
that's a slightly different volunteering role that I do, but one that I absolutely love. It's quite infrequent. It's just it relies on a school in sort of Hampshire messaging them, being like, "Have you got a speaker?" And then if I'm free, but that's always good fun. Which is going to lead me on now to my compulsory River Trust plug, proper one, because the other thing I do is I am involved in running a citizen science initiative, which is the River Trust's Big River Watch, which has been mentioned on here before because I think I plugged the September one. And essentially we run it twice a year, once in spring and once in autumn. And we've spoken about the development of apps, and it is literally a free app, Big River Watch app on Apple and Android, and you go and spend 15 minutes by your river, which is always a lovely thing to do anyway, and you just fill out a survey in the app, and you've basically asked to sort of tell us what you see, from pollution to wildlife to barriers like dams and
the state of the river.
Of the river, also things like the more social science side of things, like how's the river make you feel. And so we found really interesting things, not necessarily surprising, but it's good to have the numbers behind it, where people who have perceived their river as healthy tend to then record positive words like relaxing and calming and peaceful. The people who are surveying a river that they perceive to be unhealthy are more likely to record words like frustrated and sad. And so again, it emphasizes the importance to policymakers, the impact of the health of our environment on local communities. And essentially the idea is to build a really big picture of river health across the UK and Ireland. You can go onto the website and you can see the map for the last three, and it will show you what people have recorded and where. Quite a few of your photos are in the wildlife ID guide, which is always very helpful. But that's running again this year from the 25th of April to the 1st of May.
I love the Big River Watch.
I'm sure I'll bang on about it again. But the reason why I also wanted to mention it is earlier in the episode, I spoke about Earthwatch's Water Blitz, which is a water testing rather than a visual survey. We, as the Rivers Trust, I'm not here as a Rivers Trust spokesman, but the Rivers Trust, I've aligned the Big River Watch with the Water Blitz this year. So, you know, if you buy your river doing Big River Watch and you want to go a step further and test the water, then sign up for the Water Blitz and do both. So if you go to Earthwatch's website, you can sign up and you'll get a water testing kit. And then you can do both together at the same time because you're already there. And that, by aligning those two, you can build an even bigger picture because you've got the visual information and the water quality. So it's quite cool that this year they're being run together as a collaboration, which I think is a nice touch. But so that was my compulsory Big River Watch plug, because it really does sit very well in this episode. So 25th of April, 1st of May, download the app, go and survey your river.
Nothing wrong with that, matey.
It's got to be done. The only other voluntary things that I've got involved in, apart from obviously the big garden bird watch, is I do love a toad patrol.
Oh yes, you've done a few of those, haven't you?
I did a few in Bangor. Ruben has obviously been involved in those as well. But that, I mean, it's a really weird way to spend your afternoon. I did this as a uni student, where I'm sure I'm supposed to be in a club getting, you know, drunk and doing. And actually, I was with a head torch, high
viz. Not counting toads, you were saving
just
toads.
Helping them cross the road. Yeah. You know? Just on a dark country lane, you'd stop cars and carry some toads across the road to make sure they got there safely.
Oh, mate, that must have made you smile every time you saved one, though, didn't it?
Such a weird way to spend an evening. But honestly, it was so much fun. And I mentioned the one in Somerset, like when they closed that road, that one's actually a closed road. Over 6 weeks, they helped 3,000 odd amphibians cross the road.
I mean, how many toads did you save? Come on,
I can't remember.
It was a lot,
quite a few. Yeah. But yeah, we just spend the odd evening picking up toads, make sure they don't get run over. And it's just like, what are you doing as a uni student? Oh, I'm, you know, having road. I'm basically a lollipop man for toads. It's great.
That's a great thing to do, though.
But again. I was out there with a bunch of people who, for some reason, have all decided that's how they want to spend their Friday night. And we have real giggles.
Yeah.
And it's just fun. It's just lovely. It's a really wholesome activity. And you feel like that's a very direct impact. You go home and, you know, I saved a good 100 toads.
Well, there you
tonight.
Go. You made a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I absolutely love it. And I do think if you can get involved in some sort of, it doesn't even need to necessarily be environmental. But obviously, that's where we tend to, I don't know, gravitate towards. But it's just, it really does make you feel good.
I mean, if you are interested in volunteering or doing citizen science, certainly BTO is a great place to start if you love birds.
Woodland Trust,
RSPB. And now I'd like to give a shout out to, there is an organisation and a website called the Conservation Volunteers. They bring people together to create and improve and care for green spaces from local parks, community gardens, local nature reserves, sites of special scientific interest, school grounds, hospital grounds, waterways, wetlands, woodlands, and they connect people to green spaces that form a vital part of any healthy, happy community. You can sign up, and it's for communities across England, Northern Ireland, Scotland. And I'll give you some stats on that. Volunteers have planted over 1.2 million trees. They've picked items to fill 15,000 bags of litter. They've protected over 14 kilometres of waterways, planted and picked and protected woodlands every year. They've removed 311 tonnes of air pollution, cleared 66 hectares of invasive species, and encouraged 185,000 visits to green spaces. So it's a fantastic place to go if you're also looking for volunteer jobs in your local area or communities.
Yeah, I think we'll stick a nice bunch of
We'll stick a link
options.
Onto that, because it's a really good place to go, because it's nationwide, so you can find somewhere that's close to you.
I mean, wherever you are, you can get involved in something.
Yeah. And you can get involved in, like I said, the BTO gives you all sorts of ways of getting involved. It can be as simple as doing a garden bird watch, anything like that.
Yeah, I think I don't have any evidence to back this up. So apologies to the organisations if I'm lying here, but I feel like the big garden bird watch has been around for a long time, and you've now also got the big butterfly count, the big dragonfly count.
They do bat surveying.
Yes, there's lots of big something counts.
Yeah,
and
are,
so whatever animal you fancy, and some of them, like the garden bird one, you can do literally from your garden. So all sorts of opportunities. We'll stick loads of stuff in the show notes from Wildlife Trust, Woodlands Trust, Rivers Trust, BTO, all sorts. We'll whack them in the notes. And you know, the weather's starting to get good, so get involved, get outside. And
There are so many opportunities, and you can do as much and as little as you like. It can be an hour a year. It can be an hour a week.
Always at risk of ending up like you. You know, I'll just do the garden bird watch, and suddenly in everything.
I'm already looking at the breeding bird survey, because there is a kilometre patch.
Your window shopping volunteer opportunities at this point, aren't
they? There's a kilometre patch quite close to me. I do the wetland bird survey, but that's really dies down from March, because most of the overwintering wetland birds have gone back, you know, migrated off to their breeding grounds. So I'm now looking at the breeding bird survey, and I found a little kilometre patch that's just up the road. And I have to say,
thoroughly enjoyed watching your development from moving your photography passion to very much birds to, John, I want to go to lots of RSPB reserves. I might be a ranger.
Yeah.
And then just the development from, I'm going to do a bit of bird photography to, I'm going to be contributing to citizen science and campaigning for trying to stop development. And that.
And a bit of habitat management
as well. And now moving
into
habitat.
Yeah.
So that, again, sort of development from the interest in birds all the way up to being involved in data collection, campaigning and physical habitat management is a really nice example of the pipeline that you follow your interest.
I think once you sign up and get involved, I started doing the ranger volunteering. And then, of course, it leads on to something else where, you know, they were asking for Brent geese surveys. So I signed up for that, and now they're asking for habitat management. I thought, oh yeah, I'll go and do that.
And you get in with you get to know the community.
And they're such a lovely team of people.
So I have enjoyed watching that. Because it was, I went from, and I realize we're rambling a little bit now, but it went from COVID, lockdown, bit of photography.
Yeah.
Actually, let's focus on birds. And now we're running a podcast and you're volunteering.
I mean, I'm quite fortunate because I'm sort of semi-retired. I'm at that age where I've got a bit more control over my time and I can pick and choose. So I'm very lucky in that respect. But instead of just, sitting in the garden, I wanted to get out and make a difference. And I've had the opportunity to do that, even on a voluntary basis. But I've had the opportunity and it is, I love it. I love it so much that, and I say it's led on to me all just sorts. Wanting to sign up for everything, really. So
we'll probably round it up. But so you don't all have to follow quite in your footsteps. You can just do, Big Gun, Bird Watch, or anything. I think once you try it, it's very easy to get hooked on because it makes you feel good and it helps every
aspect
of the environment.
It's also massively important.
As hopefully we've really emphasised throughout this episode. Yeah.
So we could talk all day about this.
Obviously we pick these episodes based on what we're interested in. So really we could just keep going. But I feel like we've rattled off all sorts of stats. We've given some cool overlook to the history of volunteering. Hopefully given you some inspiration for things you could get involved in.
Yeah.
And touched on a little bit of things that we do.
Having now got heavily involved with it, I would thoroughly recommend it. It's heartwarming. It really is.
If you want to help me out, just go do the Big River Watch. It's fine.
Oh, you should do that because that's a no-brainer.
I'll be all over social media at some point promoting it anyway. So hopefully we have a good turnout. But it's just nice to spend a bit of time outside.
Yeah.
Same with all these. But influencer stuff. Go follow our Instagram account at the Birdie Bug Pod. We said it multiple times. Lots of content will be coming. I just need to move house.
Yeah, well, hopefully you'll be doing that next week.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and then I'll have a garden, hopefully, full of birds.
Yeah.
At the Birdie Bug Pod. Please also, if you're listening on any platform, leave us a review or a rating, whatever the platform allows. If you have any questions or just want to say hi, ping us an Instagram message or comment on something. We always want to chat. If you're a volunteer, let us know of things that we haven't mentioned that you absolutely love doing. What's the initiative that you're involved in that you think that maybe should be Dad's next venture? Let us know in the comment about what voluntary activities you get involved in.
And if you're down in West Sussex or Hampshire and you want to come onto the podcast because you've got a fantastic thing to chat about,
let us know
and we'd love to
just go for a walk around Pagham. You'll probably bump into Dad. But
yeah, absolutely.
So thank you for listening and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks very much. See you soon.
Bye.